walking into the third trumpet today. Welcome to the third trumpet on the Revelation series. It's yet future. We have not seen the third trumpet yet, because if we had seen the third trumpet yet, we would not have to sit here. People wouldn't have to sit around kitchen tables and wonder if the third trumpet has appeared yet. It's going to be so evident, so obvious. None of this allegorical stuff. These are literal judgments. Remember, this is called the unveiling of Jesus Christ, because up until now, he has been veiled. He has been seen imperfectly through his people. Well, speaking for myself, maybe some of you have been able to more perfectly represent him. I try. I really do. And we are living letters, Paul says. And the world gets a picture of God, albeit a dim one, through us. And how, you know, weak and elemental is that? And when Jesus Christ was on earth, that worked a little better, because he was the image of God. But even he was veiled, or even more veiled. He was veiled, but his behavior was stellar, perfect. He fulfilled the law. We are veiled as well, yet we are imperfect beings. We're struggling. We're trying to present Christ as best we can. All this is imperfect, but this is going to be remedied when he comes, because he is going to be finally unveiled. The coming of Christ is going to be a huge relief. For one thing, we'll be off duty. You know, it's like, okay, we can finally stop representing him, because here he is. And plus, we're going to have the Spirit of Christ within us, and we will perfectly represent him. Now, God could easily make us just as Jesus was when he was on earth, but he had the inherent ability to maintain this awesome communication with his Father, and he knew that he was doing the will of his Father. We have to learn lessons, you know. We have to learn. He suffered too. He learned things through the things that he suffered. But we have to learn a lot more. So we're kept humble. That's my point. We're kept humble. And so humility requires imperfection. And so we are made divinely and perfectly imperfect. Sounds like my book, Flawed by Design. And we are flawed by design. So the coming of Christ is going to be a relief. I was talking about atheists yesterday, and one of the most famous atheists is Richard Dawkins. And I'll never forget watching Ben Stein interview Richard Dawkins on the film No Intelligence Allowed about intelligent design. And Ben Stein, who is a believer, I guess, I mean, a defender of, let's say, intelligent design, that there's a creator, asked this famous atheist, Richard Dawkins, what if you get to heaven and you find out, after all this, after becoming the most famous atheist on the earth, that there is a God? And I thought Dawkins' answer was very illustrative. He said, I would say to him, sir, why did you take such great pains to hide yourself? And isn't that an enlightened comment, really? Because there is an honest man who says, admits the truth that maybe some of us don't readily admit. God does take pains to hide himself. It's so easy for him to show glory. It's so difficult to retain, withhold the glory. And so finally he's going to be unveiled. And he's coming to earth in power and glory, not as he came the first time. That was a one-shot deal. And that's not going to be repeated. Coming in humiliation, as an unknown, as someone whose glory was disguised. He's coming in great power and glory. So under the third trumpet, we're in the unveiling, chapter 8, verse 10. And the third messenger trumpets. And as it were a hue, that's the second messenger. The third messenger, remember, this is an angelic being who's sounding an alarm. And a large star falls out of heaven, burning as a torch. That's a critical piece of information there. And it falls on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. And the name of the star is said to be Absinthe. And a third of the waters became Absinthe. And many of mankind died of the waters, seeing that they were made bitter. Now, the second trumpet affected the sea. Remember, we said that the first trumpet affected the land, but God's going to take away all our comforts, all the comforts that humanity is used to. So the sea wrecked the shipping industry, decayed a third of the ships. This is going to wreck the drinking water. You don't drink out of the ocean, but the drinking water, specifically said to be rivers and springs of water. How does it do? How does this body from heaven do that? The other body that fell out of heaven at the first trumpet didn't do this. It turned the seas, a third of them, to blood. And it was an impact. It was a thud, a dull thud upon the water of this volcano-like mass of rock hitting the water. Here with the comet, well, I just gave away what I believe it is. I said here with the comet. It's a large star. A large star. But look what it does, burning as a torch. This is descriptive of a comet. And with a comet, the impact, the thud, is not mentioned here as much as the effects that it's having on the waters. Now, a comet, that is the drinking water, the streams, the rivers, a comet is a giant ball of gas, and its tail is gaseous. Love to use that word whenever I get the chance, and I don't often get the chance. Gaseous. Listen to this quote from A. Enoch on page 273 of The Unveiling of Jesus Christ. Concerning comets, their extremely tenuous nature can be verified by anyone who has observed them. They are quite transparent so that the fixed stars, that is, in the celestial realm, the fixed stars may be seen through their far-flung streamers. The tail of a comet is transparent because it's gaseous, and the comet itself is a great ball of gas. That wouldn't have been quite as popular as a Jerry Lee Lewis song as Great Balls of Fire, but actually the volcano would be a great ball of fire. This is a great ball of gas. So therefore, the comet must be composed of gas, and the result of a collision would be precisely that indicated here in the Unveiling 8 text. There would be no impact, no shock, as if a solid mass had struck the earth. Its effect on the land seems to be unworthy of note. And it doesn't affect the land. It affects the drinking waters because there is poison in the pot, my friends. There is poison in the tail. There is poison in the gas. And this gas is called, the comet is called absinthe, which is being translated by the King James, calls it wormwood. Absinthos is the Greek here. The literal elements are undrink. It makes the waters undrinkable because it fouls them. Again, this is, if a man were doing this, it would be insidious. You've already destroyed the land. You've destroyed the sea. And now, well, the comfort is we can still drink. At least we have the rivers and streams. No. Going to take away those things as well so that mankind, the things they've relied on, taken comfort in, are going to be pulled out from under them. Going to the thing that matters the most, food and drink and air too. I mean, as this thing, this comet, must be fouling the air as well. This thing has to be significantly huge, and it makes it to Earth. And it has to be spreading its noxious fumes, wormwood, everywhere. A little bit of absinthe, I mean, a little bit of wormwood apparently is beneficial, but in the volumes we're talking about, not so. And I think one of the points here is that these things that God gives, the sun and the water, are supposed to point us to Him. These are blessings. And in fact, Jesus compared Himself to rivers of living water, didn't He? He said, I'm the river of life. He said something like that, compared Himself to water. He also compared Himself to the sun. I'm the light of the world. What is the light of the world? It's the sun. So these representations of light and water that we have, namely H2O and the radiation from the sun, these are supposed to point people to God. And yet these things, these life-giving things, the sun, the streams, the rivers, have become so commonplace to people that they've taken them for granted and they've forgotten the source of their blessing. So when these things are taken away, when the water's taken away and the sun is darkened, then once again people turn to God. They may do it at first in an angry way, shake their fist at God. How dare you take away this? But the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, according to the King James Version with those F's in there. So they're gonna, people will see now, there's a source of these things. They've been removed. They've been removed by the one, the only one who can give them. And so these things are supposed to point to Christ. Thank God we're attuned to this already, but even we, as I said yesterday, tend to forget that the source of all life, the sun, the water, are only there because of the grace and the provision of God. Jesus at the well. He greets the woman at the well, and he said, how would you like to have to not come here anymore? And she goes, wow, that would be fantastic. He says, I am life. Drink from me. Whoever drinks from me will never thirst again. It doesn't mean that that woman didn't need to take a drink later that day, or that Jesus himself didn't need to imbibe of literal H2O. But the analogy there is that these other things are just types. The sun even is a type. The rivers are types. And the source of sustenance is God. And when we have his life in us and his spirit in us, it's like food and drink. In fact, the disciples came to him after he stopped talking to this woman and they said, aren't you hungry? Let's go get lunch. And he says, I have food to eat that you don't know about. And this woman's belief was like food to him. It sustained him. And that's the lesson. And when you've learned that lesson, you've come a long way. We've learned it. And so we don't need to be taught it by the taking away of these things. We already see the connection. The connection is there. We don't worship the creation at the expense of the Creator. We recognize from whom all these blessings come. So there are other analogies, and I wrote these down to remember them. I'm like, if only I can remember where I wrote them down. Let's do another quote from A. Enoch here quickly. He says, water, especially spring water, pure spring water, has a great affinity for some gases and eagerly absorbs them. Hence, the chief effect of the scourging star is to turn their drinking water into a death potion. Absinthe or wormwood is a bitter herb, intoxicating and fatal if used too freely. It produces convulsions, paralysis, and death. That's all. The triple play here. Convulsions, paralysis, and death. A third of the supply of water for mankind is transformed from the most healthful and beneficial of fluids into a potent poison, and many of mankind drink, are overcome, and die of the bitter waters. So God purposely makes water to absorb gas, especially pure spring water, and that very nature will cause it to absorb the poisonous gas, the wormwood, that comes from this star as a curse. And yet it's an eventual blessing. It is an eventual blessing. I got more to say to that point. I want to talk about Job. There's a great analogy. God takes things away and it looks like he's destroying the earth, and he is. But if you look through that, as I always like to do, look through that into the result, and you realize that the result can't come apart from the agent. And the agent here, the scouring agent, are the seven trumpets, not the least of which are the last two we have looked at. That foul the water. The thing that you expect that it'll never give out, well, at least we can drink, that itself is going to be taken away. But the end result, as we will see, is going to be glorious for the earth and for all humanity upon the earth.